Abs Entertainment Podcast.
Life without hope. Now that's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I'm your host, Captain Nostalgia, and thank you for taking a trip down memory lane with us as we talk about all things Winnie the Pooh. We are taking a trip to the 100-acre forest in just a little bit, but I cannot take this trip alone, so please help me in welcoming from Geeks Under Grace, Mr. LJ Lowery.
What's up, guys? It's good to be here.
It's good to have you. And Brandon Riff Daddy Miller from the PS Midnight Cast. What's up, man?
I have to correct you. You said 100 acre forest is woods.
Listen. Listen. The only thing I could think about as I was watching this movie the whole time is that Larry is still stuck in this forest in Kingdom Hearts 1.
How?
Oh, wow.
Ask Larry. I don't know.
Didn't Pooh Bear attack his mom at Disney, too?
I think so, maybe. I don't know. That'd be a Larry question. I don't have tabs on his mom, so.
I feel like you told me that once.
It's very well possible. If you guys are fans of the PS Midnight Cast, you guys have heard Brandon on here several times, but LJ is actually a first-time guest for us, yes. So tell us a little bit about yourself, man, and tell us a little bit about what Geeks Under Grace is.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm a grateful believer in Christ, and I've been saved and sober for about almost 7 years now. On 19th, actually, it'll be 7 years I've been sober and clean from drugs and alcohol. So Geeks Under Grace is a ministry all about reaching those of the faith and those who are geeks and fans of pop culture, like ourselves, and telling people that they're loved and that there's a place that they can go and talk with other geeks and that, you know, a lot of people who are of the faith and who are fans of geek culture, they tend to not get shunned, but they tend to get stereotyped within the church, and we're kind of here to help bridge that gap and to reach people of both realms and let people know that they coexist.
So, Geeks Under Grace, we actually had a mutual friend that we met this weekend.
Yeah.
So, my wife and I, we went down this past weekend and actually did a speaking engagement down in Lynchburg and kind of getting to know our host, and he was just kind of telling me about like the massive nature that Geeks Under Grace is, and like I had this like idea of what Geeks Under Grace was, and he's like telling me, he's like, no, he's like, they got like, this department,
yeah,
so tell us a little bit about kind of like the vastness of Geeks Under Grace.
It's very humbling to hear that, because we still consider ourselves a pretty small entity, but our main thing is we have the website, geeksundergrace.com, where we have all kinds of departments. I would say for those of you who are familiar with like IGN, it's kind of like an IGN sort of thing. We have a movies department, we have a gaming department, which I personally am a part of. I do PR work and I also write reviews and stuff. We have a tabletop department. We have television, books department, all these sections that we have writers for. And we also have Bible studies, which I've also helped in as well. We have many facets of, you know, that we cover on the website. We also have all the social media platforms. We have a Twitch team. We have a podcast as well. Like we have every ground covered just about. So
no, and I the there's there is a, such a vastness of culture that when you talk about pop culture, it's such this like blanket statement, because you're covering video games, board games, history, Doctor Who, Sherlock,
anything,
Star Wars, Star Trek, like, yeah, anything really. Yeah. And so like, that's why like, it feels cool that you guys have such a wide range. But how did you kind of get involved in doing Geeks Under Grace?
So me personally, I've kind of found Geeks Under Grace the way I've heard a lot of people have. All of a sudden, one day I found the Facebook page, and this was when it was still very new, like back in like 2014. We're only 4 years old as of May. So the way I found it was I found the Facebook, kind of floated around, checked out some articles and things like that. And so when the groups feature of Facebook came around, I heard about the Facebook group. And so I got involved in that and just started getting to know like the Twitch streamers and everything. And eventually they were starting to put out calls for one of them was for a social media person at first to handle like Instagram and or Twitter or whatever. And so I applied for that, didn't get it. And then so eventually they were looking for a call for writers for gaming. And so that's where my entry was. I eventually got there, and so I started writing reviews. And I had some writing experience prior from the high school yearbook I worked on. And so I sent in a sample, and they said, you're in. So from there, I got involved in all sorts of things. I stream on Tuesdays for our Twitch channel. I now help produce the podcast and occasionally talk on there. And I'm also the manager for media/events on the board of directors.
Because that was going to be my next thing that I was actually going to ask about was the Twitch streaming, because you guys essentially do Twitch streams every day.
Yeah.
But it's not just one person. Like you have like essentially like people that are assigned to like each day and stuff like that. So talk about that, like kind of how did that idea and that flow of that organization kind of come to bring ministry to a new level of something as simple as Twitch?
So I kind of wasn't there quite yet whenever that concept was incepted for our Twitch team, but I do know that we do things differently than a lot of people do. You know, a lot of people do have that one person that streams for hours on end. But what our Twitch team does is, you know, each of us have particular games we like to play or certain flavors. Sometimes we do multiplayer stuff, but that helps. What, to me, what that does is it helps our audience find somebody they love to watch, or if there's a certain few people they like, they'll come and tune in. So, you know, we have a different flavor of gaming for everybody. A few of our people, like, they're into like Hearthstone and the card games and stuff. One of our guys is like a MOBA player. He plays like League of Legends and Counter-Strike Go and all that stuff. And like me personally, like I play a little bit of everything, but you know, there is a flavor for everybody. I guarantee you, for anybody that does come to watch our Twitch streams, you'll find somebody that streams things you like, and you'll find a personality that you'll get attached to.
So LJ actually also last year Geeks Under Grace inspired us. The end of this month we're going to be doing our first 48-hour YouTube stream that is going to be a continual part of just game streams. And last year at New York Comic Con there was a vendor that was kind of like raising money for like St. Jude's that was doing a 24-hour stream, and then like 2 weeks later, like I found out that you guys were doing it. So what's kind of the for those kind of at home, like to peel back the curtain, because it's like planning one by yourself is incredibly
difficult. Yeah.
What's been kind of like so like that being, you know, one of your fundraisers, what's the work, I guess, kind of constitute of like going into like planning one of those?
So luckily I kind of had like a mentor through it all, Cody Armour. He does the Christian News show and stuff like that. I kind of filled in for him as he kind of took a step back from things and just became an advisor. But really, what it's all about, is, you know, scheduling has definitely been key, finding out when, you know, is a good time for people. But what we've done is, we have the extra life stream that we just started last year, but we do our own 72-hour pledge drive for Geeks Under Grace to raise money for Geeks Under Grace. And that's what's cool about having a huge team of like 6-7 people is that you can do 3 days straight of streaming, no problem. And I, having been a part of the 72-hour streams before, just as a streamer, it was so humbling to actually be on the end, like being the spearhead of it all this past year, because it was so nerve-wracking just waiting, not to sound greedy, but just waiting for those donations to come in and just, you know, is this going to be successful for our ministry or not? And, you know, we did start off a little slow, but then just, you know, like, I like to think, you know, God showed up and we raised funds more than I had expected. So it was just huge to see that work out. And we were very grateful for the support for our ministry that we saw over the 72 hours.
Now, do you guys, you know, you're talking about like Twitch streams. So like, uh-huh. Obviously like this being a platform for like podcasting, like yeah. we stepped into, you know, doing reviews for either, you know, Farsighted or our own YouTubes, or even now with That Entertains That's Entertainment. I always get the websites and everything mixed up, but they're our network now. So there's that. But you know, to us, like how we're not outright, you know, an outright Christian thing, but we always embrace the ministry aspect of it. So kind of when you're talking about these Twitch streams, how are you guys using these streams to get to know your audience, to open up doors to talk about, you know, Christ and the church and just these somewhat taboo topics in our culture?
Mm-hmm. Well, so it's just one of those things, like we kind of leave the topic open. There have been people that have come through and that have been like, oh, you guys are like Christians, you know, and there have been some people that have tried to troll us. Obviously, it's the internet. That's going to happen. I see that especially in our YouTube. It's a little bit tougher right now. Our YouTube is probably like our weakest area right now, just because we don't have a solid team. But, you know, just by us labeling ourselves that way, we open a door for people to just come in and ask questions if they want to, taking prayer requests, which we've been better about doing recently. But we've literally had people, or one person came in during a friend of mine, Joe Morgan, who's also on the podcast. He was playing Rise of the Tomb Raider on like the opening like hours of our pleasure of 1 year. And somebody came in and asked, like, oh, you're like the praying kind of Christians, right? And then we're just like, yeah. And so then they asked if we could pray for them. And so he literally paused the game and just prayed right there over the person and just everybody else, like our moderators on staff. And, you know, we all just joined in, and it was just a powerful moment to, you know, just to have an outlet for somebody who doesn't even really know God that much, or just, you know, is curious, just to have a place they can come to.
That's awesome. So you guys can click the links in the descriptions below, check out what Geeks Under Grace is doing. And LJ is actually going to be one of our streamers at the end of the month to help us raise our money for our 501c3 to get mental health resources into schools. So if you guys like what you guys hear, make sure that you guys go check them out, go follow them on all their social media. But we are jumping into the 100-acre woods right now. We're going through that little door in London to talk about the film Christopher Robin. And we're not jumping into spoilers just quite yet. So Brandon, without giving any spoilers away, what are your thoughts on the film?
It's my favorite movie of the year. And it's not even, the year ain't even over yet.
Is that, okay. Is that what you're going to leave it at?
No, Pooh was waving. This is my mom's Pooh when she was a kid. Isn't that kind of cool? Because I saw it with my mom.
That's cool.
Anyway. Man, it reminded me, how I felt when I was watching Big Fish for the first time for some reason. Well, it has the same actor. And then also where the Wild Things Are. Like, those are two of my favorite movies of all time. I kind of got that feel that I felt watching those movies, watching this movie. And already being a big fan of Winnie the Pooh and already. Like, I already knew I was going to like it, but I didn't know how much. And when it was over with, I was like, I want to go watch it again. But no, I didn't. But, so, yeah, that's my thought.
LJ?
Cool. For me, yeah, there's a lot of nostalgia behind Winnie the Pooh, especially, like, watching it as a kid and watching it with family and all that stuff. It was just a very family-centric thing that everybody knows Winnie the Pooh. Like, if you don't, then, like, you've been living under a rock, probably, in my opinion. But so it was just one of those things that this movie was as much for me and people coming into it from my view as much as it was for, like, the kids and the new generation they were trying to bring up into, like, Winnie the Pooh. So I loved just the dynamic and all the emotions of it. It was a roller coaster ride of emotions for me. And for it to be, you know, a Disney movie and to reach such a wide audience from all ages was really cool to me.
I think one thing that this film does really well is that it presents itself as a family film, but it doesn't actually, like, move away from some of the heavier topics.
Yeah, it gets deep.
it does, and we'll get a little bit deeper into it with the spoilers, but I feel like that was just kind of one thing that one of the strongest suits of this film. I really liked, like, I Pooh Bear, I feel like, just is kind of like you guys were saying, like, there's a lot of nostalgia there. So, like, growing up and watching Winnie the Pooh, and my mom had a giant Pooh Bear that was probably like 10 times the size of yours, Brandon. Like, I loved it. And, like, there's just this sense of innocence that you didn't watch. And I honestly, like, I can't remember the last time I went to a theater and just kind of felt that innocence.
Yeah.
Like, it's been so long since I've seen that. Like, maybe Toy Story 3, but that's been almost 10 years. So, like, here you have a Disney film that doesn't really feel like a Disney film, but it's embracing all of these. I felt like it was a very well choreographed film. Felt like it maybe ran on just a little bit too much. I had a little bit of problem with the pacing. Felt like there are some elements of it that staggered a little bit for me. But I mean, overall, like, it's a good family film. It's a fun time. It's a fun trip down memory lane. But that's all I can say, I feel like, without really jumping into spoiler territory.
Right.
So if you guys are listening to this right now and you guys haven't seen Christopher Robin, you guys hit the pause button because we're about to jump into some heavy spoilers. But if you guys, before you hit that pause button and you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. There are 123 suicides that take place each and every day. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That's one death roughly every 40 seconds. So you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope to get resources, to get connected to counselors, to get the Suicide Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. You guys can text anonymously to 741-741. Get connected with a therapist in your area, or you guys can even just talk to us on any of our social media. There's more resources on that page. You guys can click the links in the descriptions below. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back to talk Christopher Robin.
Hello, everybody. This is Jason.
And Aaron.
And we are the hosts of the For Better or Worse podcast. Like most couples, we have pretty different tastes.
There's a lot of things we agree on, of course, but it can be pretty difficult to find something to watch at the end of the day.
She likes comedies, love stories, and dramas.
And he likes anime, horror, sci-fi, and fantasy.
So we both thought it would be fun to force each other to watch our favorite movies, shows, or anything else we can think of, and record it here for you guys.
The show is a lot of fun, and it's not always torture. Sometimes we actually come around to each other's side.
We would love for you guys to give us a shot. So download For Better or Worse anywhere you listen to your favorite shows, and join us in the fun.
We can't wait to share our experiences with you.
All right. So before we jump into Talk Christopher Robin, one of the first like cornerstones of our show was a segment called Hope Speaks Louder. And this year we have not really been blessed enough to continuously do Hope Speaks Louder every week. We have been trying our best to get guests that are just, we're trying to have these conversations about mental health, but not necessarily, it's been harder for us to book people to share their stories. And LJ was actually a story that we were talking about having at the beginning of this year, and time just kind of got away from us. So I'm actually going to let him take the floor and have him share his story, and then we're going to take another commercial break, and we'll be right back to talk, jump into spoilers for Christopher Robin.
Okay, well, so my story is starts all the way back in 2011. So in August of 2011, it was when my life took a huge 180. I was heavily involved in drugs. At the time, I lived in California. I was heavily involved in drugs and drug addiction and some gang affiliation. And so I had a family out here in Louisiana, where I currently live now. And I just needed a change. I needed to get out of what I was doing and just kind of get rid of those bad influences. And so to kind of shorten that up a little bit, that's where I also found God and went to church and was baptized that very weekend I got here. And it was just, I felt that presence. And from then on, I've been clean and been a believer ever since. And so this is where the suicide stuff comes in. 4 months after I was I got sober and saved, I got a phone call and saying that my dad and my stepmom had left notes, and that they were still missing at the time. I actually didn't get the phone call. I called my aunt and uncle who I was living with first, and my uncle took me outside into his truck and just prayed with me before he told me the news. And so I, you know, it was all I could do was really, you know, take phone calls and just, you know, with my sister calling me and just crying and stuff, and not knowing, it was the unknown that we really had to deal with at first, and just not knowing what was going on. Pastor came to my house and stuff to just sit with me and talk with me and, you know, just counsel me through this at the time. And so I got a call at about 5 a.m. and it turns out that they had went to the beach, which wasn't far from where we lived in California. And so they found the bodies. The cops had been searching. They sent out a search party, and the cops found their bodies, also along with our family dog. Because my dad had always said, like, oh, when he goes, you know, our dog, not who was named Navi after Legend of Zelda, that she was going to go with them. And so they found the bodies after searching. It turned out that they had called a cab over there. And so the story of the notes and everything was that I was supposed to receive my note from them in the mail. So my mind going through, you know, they had planned this out like days in advance and went to the post office to send me a note and things like that. And so it was just crazy having to being faxed the like funeral home papers and stuff, having to sign off on things, you know, for their death and stuff like that. So ultimately, there was a few months there where I kind of started to isolate. I didn't really feel like going to work with my uncle at the time. I was helping him with his painting business and stuff. And I wasn't doing the right things to stay healthy and to stay connected. And so I ended up taking a grief share class at the church. There's a program called Grief Share. And that's a program that anybody can get connected with if they've ever lost somebody. And if you go to griefshare.com, I believe it is, or if you Google Grief Share, you can search for a program in your area. And so eventually working through that program and working through the steps of another program called Celebrate Recovery that kept my faith and my sobriety strong, ultimately I was able to deal with that loss. And years later, it's a huge part of my testimony, and my faith and who I am is a lot stronger because of those things I did to keep my head on straight and to grow from it. And it was also, you know, a big thing you guys always talk about with victims and villains is mental health. My dad and my stepmom were not healthy. My dad, he suffered from bad multiple sclerosis and just smoked and drank away the pain. My stepmom was going through manic depression, which I'm told was likely due to some abusive things in her childhood. So it's not like I came from a place where I did not understand. Maybe the rest of my family didn't understand. But it was one of those things where I felt like I was called to, you know, to be able to understand those things. Like I was called to break away before I had, you know, before all that stuff happened, because ultimately I was the person who flew back down to California to help run the services and everything. And to just tell everybody, you know, like why I thought what happened for a reason and things like that. And just to tell them that, you know, there was hope. And the hope for me was Christ. I mean, you know, other people might find hope elsewhere, you know, but I mean, for me, that was my hope. And that's where I had found it. And to this day, I continue to, you know, do my best to share that with others in various ways I can. So that's about it.
It's always a sunny day when Christopher Robin comes to play.
Who?
Everyone.
So nice to see you all again.
It's you. Play the game.
Tiggers make better drivers.
Tigger, eel, piglet.
Oh boy.
It's just me.
Disney's Christopher Robin in theaters August 3rd. Rated PG.
All right. Well, the door is opening, and with that said, it is now spoiler territory. So first thing we're jumping into is one common factor in all of our general thoughts was the nostalgia factor. So LJ, since I started with Brandon last time, I'll start with you this time, man. What did you think about how they kind of handled the nostalgia factor of this film, kind of bringing in, you fast forwarding these beloved characters and kind of bringing them into new scenarios and new territories we really haven't seen?
I think the idea for Christopher Robin is that, you know, a lot of the people who, you know, obviously who watched and who engaged in Winnie the Pooh as kids, you know, a lot of us were likely, you know, Christopher Robin's age. And so we kind of grew up along with him, in my opinion. And so we were in a place, you know, where I feel like, you know, a lot of people who are watching this are in a similar place that, you know, Christopher Robin is when he's an adult. And especially those beginning moments of the movie, they wanted to reflect that. And it definitely was a tearjerker for me because, you know, the whole thing was like, you know, don't forget us. And, you know, and just watching them wait for him and all that stuff. I think that, in my opinion, that was what they wanted to do with it, is they wanted to grow up, us to grow up with Christopher Robin. And so I think they reflected that very well.
Brandon, Riff Daddy, my main man. What about you?
Yeah, my thoughts, LJ kind of already said them, because that's kind of my thing too, because like you said, Christopher Robin, us watching as a kid, we were his age, and now here we are, like, watching it as adults, and like, thinking, wow, like, because I feel like we can all relate with like toys and stuff we loved as a kid, and being an adult and still have an attachment to it. And because the way that it started out, everybody was talking about with like, yeah, saying goodbye to him, and you know, them waiting for him, and kind of the moving on thing. It's like we've all had to like move on from some, I guess I say this lightly, childish things in our life, and it's kind of like, hard to grow up. So, like, can't really relate it to, like, trying to still have a childlike heart as an adult, I guess, because as the movie goes on, you see Christopher Robin struggle with, like, being a very exciting and fun adult.
Well, I feel like Christopher Robin had, like, this, like, really rough, like, transition. Because, like, when the film opens, you have I'm going away. It's the going away party for Christopher Robin. And I feel like one thing that this film does really – so, like, the film kind of goes through this, like, montage of him going through, you know, boarding school, remembering Pooh and Tigger and kind of making these drawings and – kind of keeping them away in like this secret place, and then he's sent off to boarding school. If I hadn't already said that, but then his father kind of dies, and he's kind of like propelled into this like more like maturity role. And I feel like one of the like when you're talking about like nostalgia factors, like one of the things that got me the most was that scene where Pooh wakes up out of bed. And he's just waiting at the tree for Christopher Robin to come through. And, you know, he's like, today's the day. And he just doesn't come. And there's just kind of this, like, sadness look on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was rough.
Yeah.
I had to hide from my mom a little bit because I started to cry.
Yeah, like, this is one of those movies where I went on, it was Saturday afternoon, and this movie was filled with parents and their families and stuff, and I'm home while everybody else is vacationing in Arkansas, and I'm like, well, I'm going to this movie by myself. And, like, it wasn't, it felt awkward at first at the same time, but when I learned what kind of movie this was as it started, I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't feel ashamed at all. Like, I'm here because this is a part of my childhood.
See, and like I don't know if I'm alone in this, but a couple of weeks ago we had Ryan Silverstein from the Shame Files podcast on our show, and a portion, like one of their shows that one of their episodes had covered the "Won't You Be My Neighbor" from the Mr. Rogers documentary, which if you haven't seen it yet, I cannot recommend it enough. It is probably one of my top three favorite films of this year, but. There's a scene where they're like, there's a lot of things that they were talking about in there. And one of the things that they had talked about and addressed in their show was this, you know, remembering that like Mr. Rogers existed in your childhood, but not really remembering like specifics of him.
Right.
And, like, I felt like that was kind of my way of like, as I'm watching, even like the opening scene with like Rue and like, the moms whose name I still can't remember.
Kanga.
Owl. Yeah. And and Rabbit. Like I guess I don't know if like I didn't like have like Chris like if I just wasn't engulfed as much into the Pooh Bear franchise or mythology enough as a kid to really remember these things. But it definitely was a part of my childhood, and I think I'm the only person in this conversation that didn't cry during this. I'm almost, but not quite.
I was pretty close a couple times. It's just the first few moments in, you're like, okay, keep it together.
I'm really emotional. I mean, I teared up a little bit there in Hotel Transylvania 3, so
yeah,
no one needs to know that.
I'm anyway. Kind of the same way, to be honest.
Hey, I'm emo forever, so
that's totally true, and I can vouch for that statement.
I mean,
but there's
an American football flag behind me, and it's pretty emo.
There's I think one thing that a lot of people, like, we're kind of like in this day and age right now where Hollywood studios are just, they're remaking a lot of childhood favorites or revisiting these childhood favorites, and whether that is things like, you know, Dumb and Dumber 2, or they had the King Arnold last year. We have Rugrats that's coming on the way. They brought back Samurai Jack, you know, we're Powerpuff Girls that got revived. And so you just have all of these things that are constantly being revised. And so with that, our technology is kind of growing vastly. And so a lot of people weren't really fans, like when they redid the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, they weren't really fans of the looks of the turtles. Right. So I'm kind of curious, with this being like such a beloved property and like such a childhood nostalgic memory, what are kind of some of your thoughts on how the live action looks of the characters? Brandon.
I thought it was pretty, I thought they did a pretty good job with it. Because sometimes, like you were talking about with Ninja Turtles, Samurai Jack, Powerpuff Girls, Teen Titans Go, I've gotten really salty with it, and I have to, like, grow on it. Like, when Ninja Turtles first came out, the new one, I didn't like it. Now I love it. I've binged it on Hulu a couple times. But when I first saw the trailer, the first one, and saw how they did Pooh, it didn't bother me. Like, I was like, okay, this looks about how accurate as a, I guess, essentially a, I wouldn't call it a, like a stuffed bear depicted in the movie, but like, I guess that's what accurate, how you make an animated bear look in the movie, I guess. Well,
and it doesn't feel like a rehash of Paddington. I feel that would be my best comparison as far as, you know, when you're kind of bringing a cartoon bear or like another beloved children's icon into the real world, but also trying to ground that property.
Oh yeah, I think they definitely. I can't believe you just dropped a Paddington bear reference. wow!
Okay, I hear those movies are good. I've never seen them yet personally, but I hear they're actually good.
I used to watch like some kind of little cartoon of his when I was a kid. I don't know what it was though, but anyway, yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I thought they did a good job with it. Like, fantastic with it. Like, it didn't bother me at all. Like, I had no like to it. I loved it. It looked cool. Kind of like what a lot of things are. I got some earlier. Like, whenever I saw that, like, it just, I don't know. Like, they nailed it.
LJ.
Cool. Well, I don't recall. I'm trying to remember like the intro of some of the old cartoons, because I could have sworn there was like my memory may be totally wrong, but I could have sworn there was like a scene where it would pan into like the storybook of it. And so I don't know if there was actual stuffed animals of them like in the intro or whatever. Like, I could be wrong. I could be thinking of something else, but I love how with the stuffed animal thing that they captured what was about the book as well, because this had a lot of like references to the book and a lot of references to the real life of the author and things like that. So I just love the realism that they captured with the stuffed animal aspect, but also captured the elements of the cartoon as well and made it accurate and realistic enough to where it wasn't like ridiculous CGI like they probably would have done like back in the day, or just something so outlandish. Like, it made it real enough to make it believable is what I liked.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that I liked about it. I was talking to a coworker today, and she was kind of talking about how like she had issues with the way that like Pooh and Tigger were like looked. And I was like, honestly, like the look and the detail, because there's a couple shots where the camera pans up very gracefully on like the look, like the facial look of you know, Tigger and Pooh Bear, and even Piglet. There's a couple scenes where just the detail and the beauty that they put into creating this look, like it looks like if you had something like this, that this is how it would look. So My biggest thing now is that now that we've seen that Pooh Bear can look good in a modern day take on Winnie the Pooh, I want this same kind of take when and if they ever do a Gremlins either sequel or reboot.
Oh yeah, that would be cool.
Because I don't want, like, that's what was my biggest complaint about that. Like, I didn't want, like, a CGI. Like, I want him to look like this.
Mm-hmm.
Characters look phenomenal. Whoever worked on these and made these did a great job. I feel like this the looks of these characters are definitely the standouts, and a lot of the voice actors that they got to do it. Obviously, Jim Cummings coming back to do Pooh and Tigger, mm-hmm. but also getting Peter Capaldi to do Rabbit, I thought was a great pick for it. And Eeyore with Brad Garrett, fantastic casting.
See, I don't watch a lot of Doctor Who, but I would have never guessed that was Peter Capaldi. Like, that's really cool.
Like they showed the voice casting and kind of during the opening.
Oh, okay. I was trying to more read everything and look at all the pictures in the opening. I wasn't trying to like look at the credits. I was trying to follow along. So that's cool.
Well, no, fair enough. Like, his name, and I was like, I'm kind of curious as to who he plays. And sure enough, a friend of mine was like, is huge into Doctor Who, was telling me about it. And he was like, I was like, that makes perfect sense. He was a great pick for that.
Yeah, for sure.
Dude, Eeyore clowned that movie.
You keep saying that. I don't understand. Like, Eeyore was like a great addition.
Oh, well, clown's a good thing.
No, yeah, he stole the show, in my opinion, for sure.
Okay. All right. So Brandon, are you going to go with the same thing and say that he stole the show for you?
Eeyore, I mean, it's between him and Pooh, because Pooh clowned too.
Yeah, Pooh was like, Pooh was definitely a symbol of innocence, sure, and he was just, Pooh was almost like hearing Yoda talking like a Star Wars movie. He just like spit like this advice without even like realizing it. I mean, Yoda, obviously he's wise because he's wise, but Pooh is just, he's so innocent that he says these things that are like so true. And then you have Eeyore, who's like a polar opposite, and he's just a big old pessimist. You know, like, it was a good dynamic.
What's that? Pooh said, "Nothing is impossible. I do nothing every day."
Yeah. And one of my favorite lines that Pooh said was whenever he's like, it was something about going backwards. He's like, "Oh yeah," he's like, "I never look backwards because I'm always going forward," or something like that. And it was very literal, but it was so true. I was like, yes.
See, I don't know, like I felt like I really liked where Pooh stood. I liked his journey and his arc, especially the dynamic between him and Christopher Robin, but I felt like at the same time, like, not to be like that guy, like he was the one that kind of stole the show. Like, I felt like they definitely developed a lot of his character, but not so much other people.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess I was looking at it more of like, aside from, like, you know, the main characters like Pooh and Christopher and stuff, like, as far as side characters go, like, I think Eeyore definitely, like, did steal the show. But as far as, like, the main story and, like, as far as character stuff, yeah, I totally agree. Like, Pooh was just, he was more emotion than I expected a character like Pooh to have, really.
Him and that balloon.
Yeah, yeah.
Do balloons make you happy?
Oh man, see, like that's such a simple like feel. Is like, it made you think about the simple things, you know, mm-hmm. that like that make you really happy that you forget about sometimes.
Well, I feel like that's such a great message that we need, especially in our generation of technology, because you look at Netflix alone and you just kind of talk about all of the programming that they've released this year, not to just target them, but you also have Hulu, Amazon Prime, you have all these comic book movies and blockbusters and apps and video games. And sometimes what we need is we just need that simplicity.
Yeah.
And that simplicity is drowned out so gratefully by a lot of the attention grabbing entertainment that our world and culture is nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I talking about like favorite characters, like my favorite character of this entire movie was hands down Tigger.
Tigger was great.
The scene with him in the taxi where he sees his reflection for the first time.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Had me bawling, laughing because he's just like, I'm the only Tigger. I'm the only one. What is this? His eyes are too close together.
I loved it when it just pans into the car of Christopher Robin explaining to his wife what Tigger is.
Yeah.
He's just doing it so casual. She's like, what? And then Tigger hits the windshield. Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like perfect timing.
So great. So great. And I think one of the other things that this, one of the other scenes that really just kind of harkens back to the nostalgia is when all of them are in the log and Christopher Robin is trying to convince him that he is Christopher Robin.
Oh, yeah. And
they're like, no, you're a Woozle. It's like, no, I'm not. I promise. You're a Heffalump. No, I promise I'm not. I'm Christopher Robin. So then he takes the umbrella and he starts like sword fighting. And then there's just that kind of like light bulb that goes off in Eeyore. He's like, it is Christopher Robin.
Yeah.
The best scenes.
And him, I loved watching Ewan McGregor perform that scene because it just reminded me of like, especially like, you know, being like an older sibling and an older cousin, just of having so all these younger family members. Like, I look back to like my own personal stories of like trying to coax like a younger sibling or a younger cousin to like do something or come over, you know, come over here or like to convince them, you know? So it reminded me of like as if he was interacting like with one of his own children or something, or, you know, I thought it was really cool. It was fun. Like he got to cut loose, it felt like.
Yeah. So any other things that you guys remember or that kind of like took you back to like the days of like more innocence or like just jumping into like the nostalgia?
Man, for me, this is the thought I had watching the movie. I guess it's kind of a deeper thought. Because I related so much to Christopher Robin with the aspect of like his job and like you saw him do the movie like finding Pooh again and getting back into like having fun. Like he kind of let go of being a fun person. And I feel like the last 10 years of my life, I've always dealt with people like telling me I need to let go of like comics and cartoons and grow up and stuff. And I'm like, no, I want to be an adult and I want to have fun too. And I kind of feel like there's been times in my life where I've almost turned into Christopher Robin and then found that joy and balance and find how to balance both of them out.
Makes total sense. Like, yeah. I'm so glad we live in it, the day and age that we do, where it's it's cool to be a nerd and it's cool to be a geek. Where like, you guys can't see this right now, but like between just me and LJ, like I don't know what Brandon, but there's Super Mario, Bob's Burgers, and Wonder Woman going on, and it's just it's cool. And like even like I'm pointing to a image that was taken from my bachelor or from my wedding where it's my best man and my half the bridal party where it's Superman, Green Lantern, Flash, and Batman. And you just, it's like, it's cool to be a nerd and now to, you know, have to balance everything. You can just openly embrace it.
Yeah. Like I agree with those sentiments for sure. Like, you know, like I got a bunch of like Zelda stuff and stuff on my wall in the background. And I completely relate to what Brandon was saying about, people telling you got to grow up, because especially like, you know, my background in church and in here in Louisiana, like the culture's version of a man down here is you have to own a business or work in the oil field. You have to hunt and fish. And you have to be into sports. And I am really like one of those things. And because I indulge in those things, I always, especially like, you know, my uncle, who was a role model to me, like, there was one month where I tried to literally like, it got to the point where they're like, well, no, you should unplug your PlayStation and things like that for a month because you need to feel what it's like, you know, living in the real world or whatever. And that was tough for me. And I eventually was like, no, like I'm going to be who I am. And that's why things like Geeks Under Grace was such a huge part of my life, because, you know, I found out that I was able to be who I am and still, you know, be what everybody seems to consider as a man or whatever, like, you know. So, I mean, you know, I completely relate to that.
So one thing that I feel like this film does exquisitely well is I am first and foremost, as much as a comic nerd as I am and as much as a nostalgia guy that I am a film buff through and through. Film is my first love, my first passion outside of God. And one thing that I felt like this just – like we got a little bit of the trailer in the trailer, but I felt like seeing the full vision of Christopher Robin, the cinematography in this is breathtaking. Mm-hmm. There are just certain camera angles that just capture, that literally just take your breath away. And that, like when I was talking earlier before our spoiler warning, I talked about how this film had this nature to it that it's not really, doesn't really feel like a kid's movie or a family film, because it embraces so many heavy things about it. And one of the things that it just shows, like the near and the gritty of, is war.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Christopher Robin left his daughter, like he left his wife pregnant before this war and then went away. And then, you know, by the time that she came back, she was like 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, she grew up and didn't really know her father. There's a couple scenes between Christopher and Abigail's wife where you kind of feel like they're on the brink of divorce. And even the way that he puts work before his family, it is, you know, you also have those themes of like child neglect. And so this film just handles itself so well in balancing the innocence. But I feel like, you know, obviously this being a show that's talking about pop culture, we're going to talk and mental health, we're going to talk about the handling of some of the heavier nature of the subjects as well. I love the fact that they didn't dumb these down. They showed them for the reality that they were. Brandon, how did you kind of think that some of these heavier topics that this film addresses, how do you think they handled it?
And they held it pretty good, because I mean, like, I think they knew going into the movie that it would not only be kids coming to see it, but be adults coming to see it too. And I think Disney and Pixar, well, I know it's not Pixar movie, but I think they're really good about adding in very like real and adult things in with the kids stuff, because they know that adults are going to bring their kids to see it. They want the adults to connect to it and enjoy it too. And I think they handle all the deep stuff in it very well, because a lot of people deal with that stuff. Like, because like I'm sure a lot of maybe like grandparents who may went and seen it with their grandkids, a grandfather might can relate to that, like to the war scene, you know, going away and coming back, and his daughter's, you know, like 7, 8 years old and never met him until he came back from war, which I thought that was, like, I remember looking over at my mom and was like, wow, like that was, was not expecting that in that Winnie the Pooh movie. But I feel like they didn't really sugarcoat the realism of it. I mean, they let, you know, Christopher Robin express what he was dealing with, and I thought even like with Pooh and them expressing like their sadness and like losing hope that Christopher Robin would come back, like they let the characters in the movie express everything exactly how it needed to be, and made it super relatable to anyone who ever deals with anything like that.
I think that, you know, not to really talk about this now, but we went out to lunch with a missionary this past Sunday, and he was kind of talking about recently sitting down and like reading these statistics about children born out of wedlock or children born out of like into like single family, you know, single parent homes. And, you know, just these cultures now, I guess like our culture has it's so much different than it was back then. And but I feel like, you know, having parents that are single for, you know, 6-7 years or even the child's life, like stuff like that's like, it's not really uncommon nowadays. So I feel like that's another great connecting point that it makes to the audience. And even when she does have Christopher Robin, even when Madeline does have her father back, she doesn't really have him back because he is so consumed by work all the time.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, because what I, as we were talking and as listening you guys talk, it just reaffirmed me on my thoughts about how timeless the message is, because, you know, the setting is like the early 1900s and all that stuff, and just but somehow they still made it to where, like, I guarantee you, if you watch that movie any other time and maybe even years down the road, that message is still going to be relatable. And that's one thing I really loved about the message that it was trying to tell.
Yeah, and I love I love that you brought up the timeless aspect of it, because there is this, I feel like that's one thing that films like this have that do really well, is I feel like in 50 years you can watch a movie like this or like Wonder Woman, or go back and watch mm-hmm. something like Saving Private Ryan or The Patriot, and these period pieces, they hold up extremely well, because while yes, their messages are just timeless, and it adds to their timeless just aspect, so to say. And I feel like that's one thing that this, even with the heavier topics, I feel like we're slowly getting into this. We're slowly kind of stepping into this nature where it's not quite that much different from the time setting. So like you had talked about, like it's set in the early 1900s, but things like divorce and workaholism, I don't know if that's a word.
It is one now.
Child neglect and just these just distracting, really. I feel like these are just timeless things that really add depth to this film. And really, I love the fact that it's just not a film that's gonna, like you were talking about, Brandon, and maybe it was LJ, but you know, this isn't, scenes like this, like there are a lot of scenes in this film that you just don't feel like you weren't expecting from a Winnie the Pooh movie.
Yeah, for sure. That's what amazed me was, I was kind of looking for, you know, there eventually we get to those adventurous moments like later in the movie. And I was kind of floating around on Facebook and seeing like parents from church and stuff talking about taking their kids to see it. And it did take a while for the movie to build up to that sense of adventure and, you know, the running around and trying to get Christopher's papers back to him and stuff. Like, that's kind of what the kids are there for. And so I saw a parent's comment on Facebook saying that her little girl she's kind of started to lose interest around whenever, like, the war stuff started coming up and whenever, like, all the, like, real life themes and issues were being touched on. But I love how, you know, like what that let parents do was to encourage their kids to be like, hold on, you know, it's going to get good. And so eventually is when we get to the very Disney things and the very adventurous stuff that kids came to see. And I think that's really cool that they did that.
And I'm just kind of hoping that parents aren't just, I feel like there are films that come up that you take your kids to go see because they're just fun family films. And then I feel like you get films like Christopher Robin where families go down and you have these serious, more serious issues and you have that are meant to be specifically to start conversations after the movie.
Yeah.
And I feel like that this is something that when you're talking about things like divorce or distractions or child neglect or war and just really just these these heavier topics that just this film divulges into. These are conversations that parents should be having with their kids. And, you know, I'm not a parent, so, like, I guess I don't really have any room to speak. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, you know, letting your kids see and experience something like this, like, it just kind of goes to waste if you don't really dive into some of these conversations, because there are some great conversation points that this film does bring up.
Yeah. And real quick, it's kind of sad, because I kind of heard that, I mean, this movie hasn't been getting the greatest of reviews apparently, which bums me out. Like, it's been getting kind of like average, but some of the reviews were saying that, like, people felt like it was trying to guilt trip parents. And I'm like, no, that's not it at all. Like, it's, And that kind of made me sad to see that, to see those comments in the reviews.
I understand. And so we're keeping all along with the heavy nature. This is the point in our show called Roads to Hope. And this is the point in our show where we engage with our guest of the week and pull a theme of either mental health or hope out of the episode's content. And with this one, we've already talked about it. We've already touched about it, but there's just a simple nature that exists in this film. And what is more simple than conversation and friendship? And so this film does that pretty well. And I feel like friendship and conversation are, and simplicity really, are two things, are three things that you really need to have. I feel like they are the balancing act, and kind of like what LJ was talking about earlier with when he was sharing his story about, you know, kind of how, you know, how Geeks Under Grace handles the streams, or how the loss of his parents affected him, and he was able to springboard that to talk about the hope of Christ, or just hope in general. I feel like those things are stuff that we need to have, and those are things that we need to grow. Even, you know, I think Brandon and I, we've shared this on PS Midnight Cast. We went through this like 5-year disconnect where we didn't talk, and it was the subjects of like suicide prevention and hope that really reconnected us and really rekindled what we had. And now, like, we talk every day, we're best friends. Mm-hmm. And the idea of friendship, and just at its simple core, it just goes a long way. And that's really a big portion of this film, is Pooh trying to find his friends and then trying to find Chris, like trying to help Christopher Robin. So with that, why do you think that the themes of friendship are so important, Brandon?
Well, over the past year, it's been a year and a half now that we've been reconnected. You know that friendship has been a huge thing for me, because I have lost a lot of really close friends over the years of just them just not connecting anymore. And you know, that loss of those friends leaving me behind, it put, you know, really made me struggle with a lot of mental health. And that was one thing I could really big was like Pooh waking up and find his friends. You know, and that's a really big, a really touchy subject for me, is friendship, is because, like, I still think about that stuff every day, and it bums me out when I see those old friends on Facebook or on Twitter, and I just, like, miss it. But then I think, you know, like, this is a very, like, common and very, like, I guess, cliche saying, but friends come and go, you know, as crappy and as scary as it sounds. But also, like, at the same time, like, I have a small handful of friends, including you, Josh, like, through everything, have stuck to me through thick and thin. And I have to look at that, like, the very small things, like, yeah, I don't have this big circle anymore, but I have 6 people who have never turned their back on me at all. And I just got to kind of, like, focus on that. But anyway, I'm sorry, I got in a rabbit hole, because that's such a big subject for me, the friendship. But it's so important to have friendship in your life, because, like, you could not have a good relationship with your family, or couldn't have a good relationship with people, with coworkers, and like your core friends have become your family. And if you don't have anybody you can kind of just let loose with and just talk to and hang out with and be real with, like, you're going to be miserable. And like when you, like when Pooh waking up couldn't find his friends, that freaked him out because he's like, oh my God, my friends are gone. What do I do? Like, that's kind of what happens if you have no one in your life that you can call a friend or family, rather. You just feel like you're just alone, and that sucks. I don't know. That's all I got.
Yeah, I come from a similar situation. Being that I moved around a lot, especially when I was a kid, through my parents' own divorce and things like that, like, it wasn't long. Like, it was kind of like I had friends, but I wasn't that close with them because I moved around a lot. And the thing about that was, when I moved to Louisiana, I didn't really have friends at first, and it was very easy for me to isolate. And so I would be lying if I didn't learn anything from that time I did isolate and the time I did step away from the video games and things like that, because I also found that there was more to life, and I made a few friends from church, and you know, that was cool. And then I also, when I found Geeks Under Grace, I found people that like I could confide in. Like, I'm pretty close to like some of these people that like I've never actually met in real life, which is crazy to say. But you know, without friendship, you know, I wouldn't have anybody to lean on. I wouldn't have anybody to look for advice with, and just people to walk through life with is so healthy. And, you know, it helps keep focused, and it helps keep me, on the right path where I need to be, because I can have somebody there that, you know, calls me out and be like, hey, like, you know, that's probably not a good idea. Or, you know, I have somebody to keep me accountable, basically. And, you know, without that, you know, you tend to get wrapped up in life just kind of like Christopher Robin did. And so that's where I connected with that aspect of the movie.
Yeah, and I totally relate to both of you guys were saying. Like, it's community is such a viable thing, and there will just be times where, like, I will be bored and I'll just shoot Brandon a text, or I'll shoot my wife a text, and just desire conversation. And it's one of those things that it breaks any feelings of neglect or just lies. And, you know, I've said it a couple times on this show is that, you know, yes, while this isn't necessarily a Christian podcast, but, you know, Christians do run it, and do, you know, we get a whole array of guests here and there. When God made man, God looked at Adam and said, it's not good for man to be alone. And I really felt like right now, as we're talking about the value of friendship, like I really had to say that, like, putting that out there, that whether you believe in God or not, the creator of the universe looked at you and said that it wasn't good for man to be alone. Like, he created you for companionship, for friendship. And even if you can't be in the same room as some of the best people in your life, it's still good to have those friends. And friendships, like LJ was talking about, really create things like accountability and laughter and tears and anger and venting and all of the above. And when you can have just those few people that in your life, like, it's better to be surrounded by two or three people that truly love you and truly will be there for you no matter what, than a whole room of people.
Yeah, I mean, real quick, when you mentioned community, I think of the morning after I got that news whenever I had learned about what happened with my parents. I had never known the definition of community until I had a couple guys from Sober Recovery, and they showed up at my door the next morning to, you know, because they heard what happened and they, you know, wanted to make sure I was okay. And a lot of them helped me, you know, fund, you know, my trip back home to California to run the funeral. I bought my suit for the service, you know, with their assistance. And I had never seen a love like that ever in my entire life. And without friendship, without making connections, you'll never get that. And so it's good. That's what I love about, you know, friendship and community is not just because they're there when you need something, but they're there, you know, your friends are there through the thick of it and through everything. You know, it was a love that I had never felt before.
I want to drop a quote real quick that always reminds me of, I always get reminded of this when I talk about friendship and community and just kind of like how you can feel without a family or friends in your life. And it's a quote from George Feeney. It's lose one friend, lose all friends, lose yourself.
Oh man. Yeah. That's yeah. That's deep though.
I mean, George Feeney was a freaking poet, man.
Yeah.
I mean, if you spent a couple years riding around David Hasselhoff, wouldn't you be a poet?
I don't know. I don't know what I don't. I want to be. I want to be a fly on the wall for that one.
All right. Well, if you guys ever do need community or friends, it's the reason we push the content that we do. Coming back to just a serious note, you guys can message us on any of our social media. We'll give it here in just a few minutes, or you guys can click the links in the descriptions. But thank you guys so much for hanging out and talking some Christopher Robin. Hopefully with this episode, Larry from the Retro Gamers will get out of the 100 Acre Woods and Kingdom Hearts. Brandon, if you want to message him and tell him how. But on a more important note, where can people find Geeks Under Grace?
You can find Geeks Under Grace at geeksundergrace.com and anywhere on social media you search Geeks Under Grace. On Twitch, it's twitch.tv/geeksundergrace.
Simple. And, I like it.
Mm-hmm. And then you can find me at WarHeroLJ, which is my screen name for most things, on Instagram and Twitter.
All right. Links will be in the description below. And Riff Daddy, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at BrandonPSMC, and you can find me on Instagram at TheChangingGoTimes for Under Oath fans who get the reason why my name is that.
And you can catch both of us on a brand new season of the PS Midnight Cast, which drops next week as well. We're talking Zoe 101 for our season premiere.
Oh, boy.
That's a throwback.
This is going to be a good episode.
It was a fantastic episode. And you guys can find us everywhere, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and iTunes. Make sure that you guys like, follow, and subscribe to us. And if you guys like what we stand for, make sure that you guys support us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains. Consider being a part of our Facebook group, Hope Culture, and sign up for our monthly newsletter. Not to mention, again, you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope for resources if you guys are struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression. And until next time, remember to keep talking nerd, talking hope, and speaking nothing else.